What is going on? It is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you on a Thursday evening. Brandon Marcus here. Hope you're having a fantastic final couple days of your week, whether it's a Thursday or a Friday that you're listening. Most likely you're getting this on Friday morning. So TGIF, and hope everybody has a great weekend as we are in the dead period of sorts before Clippers basketball gets back up and running and training camp starts. And then, of course, you got preseason and then the regular season. The schedule is out. We're going to hit on that in this podcast. But we got to start off, of course, with a trade that happened, you can say officially today, as Patrick Beverley traded from Utah to the Lakers. You knew Pat Bev was on the way out, just a matter of where. And it turns out he goes to the Clippers' foe in the Los Angeles Lakers. And who better to break down all things Clippers than my buddy Justin Wilson at LA Clippers Film, back on the pod for the first time in a long time. Justin, how are you, my guy?
Thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure. Haven't been on in a while, so it's good to be back, man. It's good to be back. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, and I haven't had many podcasts over the last couple of months because there hasn't been much going on, and it's just been a chance to kind of catch up with the family before things get crazy with Clippers basketball. But we had to go and talk about this Pat Bev trade and, of course, the Clippers schedule. Let's start with the Pat Bev trade. When that broke yesterday, it caught me by surprise. I didn't expect, A, for Pat Bev to get traded this early on. I thought they would figure out the Donovan Mitchell thing first. And B, for him to go to the Lakers, because it just seems like too smart of a move by the Lakers for them to pull off something like that, especially when they've got Westbrook. They got to figure out what they're doing with him. I got to tell you, I think it's a great trade for the Lakers. I know some Lakers fans, friends in my life that want nothing to do with Pat Bev. They think he's annoying. They think he's a pest, and they don't want him on their team. And I say to them, you know, your team got better. It's really simple. Your team got better with the trade that was made. You got a guy who can shoot the three ball. He can defend. And frankly, this is the Lakers team that their biggest issue from the team that won the title versus the team that has been tanking the last couple of years is that they have no defense. And Patrick Beverley is a guy that instantly provides defense. He makes the playoffs every single year he's healthy. For the most part, I mean, there was one year I think he didn't make it when he was out for, I think, the whole season. I don't know exactly how many games he missed of that year, but his record's nearly perfect in making the playoffs. What are your thoughts on the deal that landed Pat Bev with the Lakers?
I thought that the moment he went to Utah that the Lakers were a possibility, just because given his age and given the wear and tear on his body, he doesn't really make sense for most people. I mean, most teams in the league, and the Lakers were the one team that they are trying to win now, but they don't have a lot of players that can help them win now. And so I thought Patrick Beverley is a player that the Lakers could throw into their rotation come playoff time. And if you just look at their roster, 3 through 15 is just, I'm not going to say awful, but like, you don't want to play like Juan Toscano-Anderson big minutes in a playoff series, or Lonnie Walker in a playoff series. And, you know, they just have a ton of guys where, like, you look up, if they're playing like 20 minutes in a game three of like the first or second round, you get queasy a bit. And so I think having Patrick Beverley in the fold to alleviate that is very good. It's a no-brainer for this team. I mean, I don't think you would say playing Talen Horton Tucker or Stanley Johnson big minutes come playoff time is like a win for the Lakers. You know what I mean? So he, to me, becomes immediately their third best player. He's someone who shot like 39% from three in two of his last three seasons. He's a historically great rebounder for someone who's 6'1". You know, I remember vividly, what was that, game five, when we were down 3-1 against the Golden State Warriors, And the reason why we pushed it to six is because he had like 16 points and like 12 rebounds against, you know, KD and Steph and Clay. And so, you know, he's not just someone who has a lot of heart. I mean, he obviously does, but I just think he's a genuinely talented basketball player who he's got floaters. He can attack closeouts. He can hit open threes. And he's someone who, from a basketball perspective, you love his character because, unlike Russell Westbrook, he's not someone who's looking to hijack the offense. He's looking to support the offense. He's looking to play off of LeBron. He's looking to play off of Anthony Davis. He's looking to defend the point of attack. He's looking to defend two guards and stuff like that. And so he's just an incredibly great glue guy, an incredibly great complimentary piece. And honestly, the real issue with this roster right now is that he's their third best player. And the Lakers could find themselves leaning into him a little bit too much in a regular season. And as the Clippers saw, he's just not durable at this point of his career. He's not going to play more than 50, 55 games. And so if the Lakers need like 25, 30 minutes a night from him, that could be potentially problematic. So I think they have more moves that needed to be done, that needs to be done. But as far as like the acquisition of Patrick Beverley, that's a no-brainer. That's one of that's one of Pelinka's finest moves in his tenure as a front office exec for the Lakers, which comes on the heels of one of his worst moves, which is letting Alex Caruso go for Talen Horton-Tucker. So that move was awful, and this move doesn't necessarily make up for that, but on a raw base, Patrick Beverley is better than Talen Horton-Tucker. He is better than Stanley Johnson. So I'm all for the move, and unfortunately, it does make the Lakers better.
You brought up a point that I wanted to bring up, and that is the health of Patrick Beverley. And we've been banging the drum on this podcast and everywhere that Pat Bev just hasn't stayed healthy, and that's why the trade made a lot of sense when you got Eric Bledsoe, because the Clippers needed somebody to stay on the floor when PG and Kawhi have been hurt, and the Clippers just couldn't get guys on the floor consistently. And so that trade made sense at the time. And then for now, the Lakers to bring him in and pair him with a guy in AD that can't stay on the floor. And then you bring in LeBron, who is starting to break down a little bit, and he's gotten hurt the last several years. And you got three guys there. And you mentioned that Pat Bev is probably their third best player right now. You got three guys that can't play 82 games. I mean, they just flat out cannot. And it's going to be interesting to see both LA teams and how they manage their superstars, because of course you've got Kawhi coming off the injury, and you've got PG, who has struggled the last couple of years to stay healthy. And then of course, like I just said, LeBron, AD, Pat Bev, how do the LA teams keep their guys healthy? And we'll get into the schedule in a little bit in terms of the back-to-backs and what that looks like. It's really going to be interesting what the Lakers do with Pat Bev, because you bring up a good point that if they play him a lot of minutes, then they're going to get in some trouble because he's definitely going to get hurt. But the question is, do they have Westbrook on the roster? And what's crazy to say is that if with the rumored Heald and Turner deal, if Indiana does decide to take on a couple of first round picks along with Westbrook, and they somehow hope they don't do it, but if they trade Heald and Turner, you look at Pat Bev alongside Heald, Turner, LeBron, and AD, and all of a sudden, that team is a top four team probably in the Western Conference.
You think so?
Yeah, I think if you put Pat Bev and what he brings leadership-wise and distributing, Buddy Hield, who is a knockdown shooter from three, Miles Turner, who's great defensively and blocks a ton of shots and can rebound the basketball, AD and LeBron, if healthy. Of course, it's if healthy. I mean, they're not a top four team if they're not healthy, but LeBron is LeBron, man. You put him with AD, Hield, Pat Bev, and Turner, four very solid basketball players. And, of course, AD is more than solid. And I think that's a damn good team. You disagree?
I think they would be painfully short on wings. Yeah, and
I agree.
You know, Patrick Beverley is still a really good defender, but again, he's breaking down. He broke down last year against when he was with the Timberwolves, and Buddy Hield is a god-awful defender. He can't defend his position, and so who's guarding the big wings? Like, who's guarding the Paul Georges of the world? Who's guarding the Kawhi Leonards of the world?
I think that's more of a question for the playoffs, though. I think if you look at the regular season, we don't see the wings and all the stuff that you see exploited in the playoffs. You don't see that as much in the regular season.
Perhaps, but isn't that the whole point for the Lakers?
Oh, for sure. Right. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden they become an NBA Finals contender with that roster, because I think that the Bostons and the Clippers and the Bucks, and you look up and down, the Warriors, you know what I think? Of course, the better teams, of course, that are better.
I think the biggest reason why that trade would help the Lakers is they simply get off of Russell Westbrook's money.
Of course.
And that allows them just a ton of more flexibility. So they could be a top four seed, but even if it's not looking like that at the deadline, there are certain things they can do now to at least try to improve their team. And so, like, the Patrick Beverley move helps, but not really. It doesn't really change the outcome of them, in my opinion, because one injury to LeBron or one injury to Anthony Davis, and they are completely toast.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
completely toast. So they really need to get off of Westbrook's money, and then the Lakers become an interesting team. Like, they certainly should be ahead of the play-in fray if they get Turner and Hield and Beverly and LeBron, and that now you start getting a bit more competent as far as just good basketball players. And that's what, honestly, I thought they lacked this year, and that's what they lack right now, right? Like, they have a lot of interesting guys that, like, in a vacuum, but, like, I don't know if Lonnie Walker is actually a good NBA player. I don't know if Juan Toscano-Anderson is a good NBA player. Russell Westbrook is not a good NBA player. I struggle to find any good NBA players from their 3 to 15, which is why I love the Patrick Beverley move so much, because you just get a guy who's just a good NBA basketball player. And that is honestly the big reason why that Russell Westbrook deal just hurts them so much, because he's just taking up all of their flexibility from a salary cap perspective. And he sucks. He's just not a good NBA basketball player. So we'll see if they can pull off the Turner and Hield deal. That certainly would make them very much more interesting. It's weird, though, because they've been wanting Anthony Davis to play the five this whole time, and then they get Turner, which would push him to the four. But those are questions that's much – you would rather those questions than, hey, how is Russell Westbrook going to fit? Even though we already seen this movie before. So for the Clippers' sake, I hope that they don't pull that deal. That's for sure.
Yeah, and it just makes no sense for any team to bail out the Lakers like this. But if Indiana thinks that, hey, we'll take on the contract and we'll be much better off next year once the money's off the books, then I guess it makes sense for Indiana going forward. But you got a guy in Tyrese Halliburton on your team that if you put anybody like Westbrook on the court with him and you just destroy his growth, it just makes no sense whatsoever to put...
They'll probably buy Russell out, right?
Yeah, I think so. You would think that they would do something there, because it makes no sense to put him on the floor with Halliburton, because anything that he does on the floor is just going to be just bad for Tyrese. And he's too good of a basketball player. You don't want that type of stuff just carrying over to Halliburton in any sort of way. You don't want Halliburton picking up anything that Westbrook is doing at this point. So we'll see what happens there. I want to ask you a question, though, about Pat Bev. Mm-hmm. And this is always interesting, because I think it kind of goes hand in hand with a Chris Paul thing and how Chris Paul is viewed after he leaves the Clippers and goes to the Phoenix Suns. Pat Bev's a guy that works his ass off, and he was a fan favorite for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. How are you going to view him on the Lakers? Because there's two ways. You can say, damn, this guy is just a straight-up baller, and, you know, kudos to him and the way he's frustrating Kawhi and PG. Or is it, man, this guy's annoying as hell, and I just want him to F off and get out of here. I mean, because there really is two ways to look at this, and I don't think there's a way to look at it both ways. You really have to choose one, whether you think he's going to be an annoying pest that you begin to start hating, or it's just all love for Pat Bev, always going to love Pat Bev. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I for me, it'd be like, you know, for those 48 minutes, he's an ob, he's the enemy. Yeah. And he will be very annoying. But outside of those 48 minutes, just reading the room a little bit, it feels like a lot of Clipper fans understand just how good of a player he is, mm-hmm. and just how good of a person he is from a spirit perspective. One thing you can't take away from Patrick Beverley is that he leans all the way into whatever team he's on. Like when he got traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, he represented that team as if he was like a Timberwolf lifer. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know a lot of people were laughing at the emotion he showed when he beat the Clippers in the play-in, but like, that's the kind of stuff every team in the league wants. You want one of your rotation players to have that level of vested interest into the franchise. And the level of emotion he showed when he was a Clipper, as far as like, this is for the people in the back, and like you literally saw him leave it all out on the floor. And you know, he had a lot of like ups and downs as far as like playing time. I remember against the Dallas series when he got benched, but then he came back against Utah, and he had some moments against Phoenix as well. Like he just contributed a lot to the current Clipper culture. And so hopefully I speak for a lot of Clipper fans, as whenever we're not playing the Lakers, those four times we're not playing the Lakers, I think we all are rooting for Patrick Beverley. You know what I mean? It may come at the expense of like wins and losses, but you know, I think we all want to see Patrick Beverley do well. And I was happy for him to see him get traded to the Lakers, because the Utah Jazz are blowing it up. And at 34, you know what I mean? If he gets bought out, who knows who picks him up? At least, he gets picked up by a team that's actually trying to win.
Yeah.
And a team that actually values what he does well. You know what I mean? Like the Lakers need Patrick Beverley, right? So to be a Laker and be valued, that's, you know, and I think Russell Westbrook will not be a Laker next year. And so I think Patrick Beverley may end up even starting. And so it's cool to see him on a prominent team that's actually trying to do something. So all love and respect to Patrick Beverley. No ill will towards him at all.
Yeah, I'll hate him for the 48 minutes. And the same exactly. And the same goes for Chris Paul. I mean, he is annoying as you know what when playing against the Clippers, and the shit that he pulls off against the Clippers. It's one of those things, but I love CP. I mean, what he did for the Clippers when he was on their roster.
I have mixed feelings, man.
Really? It's interesting. Go out to elaborate, because I think no, that it's just the game against San Antonio, that game seven, and just the shit that he pulled off in the playoffs to help out the Clippers. It's just always going to be a guy that I love and respect, but hate when he's on another team.
Yeah, so like I was there game four against Oklahoma City when he switched on to Kevin Durant, and like he had like 25, 26 points, and he helped us come back to tie that series at 2-2. I was there for that game seven game winner against the Spurs. And like my issue with him has nothing to do with on the floor. Like he was responsible primarily for like some of the greatest Clipper basketball of all time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just when he left, he did a press. He was doing like a press run talking about how the Clippers don't have no culture. The Clippers are not trying to win, and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, man, you contributed to the, if the culture was bad, like you're the leader, you contributed to that. You know what I mean? And yeah. So I just didn't like how he kind of down talked the Clippers on the way out. And so that's part of why, like, I'm like, I don't know. But like, I definitely appreciate from a basketball perspective, everything he did for the franchise. And a part of me always wants to see him do well. It's just that part didn't sit all that well with me.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think a lot of that has to do with Doc and what happened with him. And I mean, the more and more that I listen to JJ Redick, whenever he has old Clippers on the podcast, it seems like a little bit more comes out. There are more and more breadcrumbs about mm-hmm. how dysfunctional that locker room was, and how Blake and CP were just at it. And Blake could not handle CP screaming at him and trying to get him into that competitive arena that CP's already in. It just seemed like they couldn't get Blake on that same page. And then, of course, you got DJ in there, who is buddies with Blake, but also buddies with CP. And then you got JJ, who is competitive as hell. And it just seemed like a mix of guys that wanted to win, but just too many egos in the room. And that's why you look at Chris Paul and he leaves. And like you say, I mean, it's certainly, it was time. And I think a lot of that had to do the way he acted with just being frustrated that the Clippers didn't win as much as they should have. And so perhaps he was just taking out the anger. But I get what you're saying there. And it's just the stuff with him, with the flailing and all that stuff. Now when you play against him, it's like, man, this guy's annoying as hell. And then you look at Pat Bev. He's going to do the same thing where he's going to think that he never fouled anybody. And then he, of course, fouls everybody. It's just one of those things. The funny thing to me, though, is just how Lakers fans are seeing how right now they're like, you know what? Not really thrilled to have him. But I think you wait about 15 games into the regular season and they'll be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. And they're going to start loving him when they've been bad-mouthing Clippers fans and bad-mouthing Pat Bev for all this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Like, I really question what Laker fans see in their roster for them not to be like, yes to Patrick Beverley. Like, I'm kind of confused. Like, did you actually want to come into the season with this roster? Like,
yeah, I have a friend. This roster
is barely a playing team. Like what are we doing here? So, like,
I know.
You actually got a productive NBA player, albeit older and injury prone, but like, it's THT and Stanley Johnson, man. Like, I think part of it is, you know, Laker fans have been watching Patrick Beverley through Laker gaze. And so if you've been watching Patrick Beverley through Laker gaze and he spent the last few years of his seasons in the NBA, mostly with the Clippers, you're going to have very real disdain for him, right? Like, he's the epitome of streetlights over spotlights, which that campaign that Laker fans completely hated. So, I mean, I understand why there's a little bit of disdain towards him, but what I don't understand is the people who are talking bad about him from a basketball perspective. But like, as you said, all it'll take is about 15 games and Laker fans have be like, oh man, thank God he's here instead of Westbrook.
I've got a friend who is a massive basketball fan and knows the sport very well, who's a Lakers fan. And he has been telling me the last couple of years that Pat Bev sucks and that Rondo's better than Pat Bev. I was like, all right, you are delusional and you have no idea what you're talking about. And I was going to text him yesterday. I'm like, no, I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to wait and just be like, I told you so. Like, just wait until things go the way that I think they're going to go with Pat Bev. And just be like, I told you so. Because you have no idea what you're talking about if you think that Pat Bev is anywhere close to Rondo. Rondo is much worse than Pat Bev. And the things that Pat Bev brings to the table are just light years better. So it's funny. It's just funny how some fans react. But we'll see how it goes. Let's move on to the schedule. And the other big news with the Clippers. And so first off, no 5-7s. Thank God for that. First time in franchise history that the Clippers don't get any 5-7s. So that's obviously a great thing. 15 back-to-backs, including one that's a back-to-back with their first home game. Clippers open up against the Lakers on October 20th. First home game is Sunday, October 23rd. Against the Suns, I looked at the schedule and you look normally to see the 10, 11, 12 games on the road and you look at the 5-7s. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, it just looks like the Grammy trip is one of those that always is not great, but it's not terrible. I mean, this year it does take them away from their home arena for 10 of 11, but it just doesn't seem like this schedule is as bad as the past. What were your thoughts when you saw the initial schedule? Because I think the first thing that stood out to me was obviously the no 5-7s, which is huge. The 15 back-to-backs will be certainly interesting because that means that's 15 games that Kawhi is not going to play in at minimum. Let's start there then, because I was going to bring up the back-to-backs later, but let's start there. You think Kawhi could be playing in back-to-backs?
If I'm not mistaken, in the 2021,
yeah,
when he made All-NBA, yeah. I think he was playing at least a few back-to-backs.
That was towards the end of the season, right?
It may have been. And so I think initially he probably won't play back-to-backs, but I don't think it's going to be like just completely not play any. especially if there are some games in which we need or something like that. It just seems like if he's healthy enough, he wants to play. Like, the Clippers didn't want him to play back-to-backs, and he ended up playing them. So, I mean, we'll see. I doubt he plays back-to-backs initially, yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised about this. I wouldn't be surprised to see him play back-to-backs at some point this season. I wouldn't rule that totally out just from what happened the last time he was playing. And by all accounts, he appears and sounds like he's fully healthy and ready to go. So, as long as he's mentally engaged with the idea, I don't see why not at some point he ends up playing back-to-backs. The thing that jumped out to me when it comes to the schedule, other than the no 5 and 7s, which is like really good, is the start. I feel like we could get off on a really good foot to start the season. I mean, you look at the start of the schedule, there's the Lakers, there's the Kings, you've got the Thunder twice, you've got the Rockets twice, you got the Spurs, you have the Jazz, the Cavaliers, the Lakers again. And like, that's all through the early parts of like November. And I'm just such a stickler to starting the season well and making sure you win the games that you're supposed to. And my goal is like 60 wins. And so the soft opening to the season gives us maybe a chance to like really make some hay as far as like stacking the wins. And so more than anything, I was just looking at the start. Like I think we play the Rockets like 3 times in like November, and we play the Jazz and we play the Thunder multiple times, especially they'll be without Chet. So it's just opportunity to really start out on the right foot and get in front of the rest of the West. So I'm really anxious to see how we start the season, because that could give us an idea as far as where we could potentially finish at the end of the season.
That's a good point. You look at the first 18 games for the Clippers, they've got 2 against the Lakers. They have 2 against Oklahoma City. They have 3, like you said, against Houston. And it certainly is an easier schedule. And then I was going to do the first 13 games before the game against Brooklyn. Or actually, I think it was right after the game against Brooklyn. But then you look and that's Houston, Dallas, Detroit, San Antonio, Utah.
After that, more Brooklyn wins.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule was really favorable to the Clippers early on. I think the over-under in Vegas is 51. If I'm not mistaken, for the Clippers, they're over-under win total, which seems...
Yeah, really, it was.
It seems really low. Because that would put them at 51-31. And what's interesting is with the Clippers, and you mentioned the start of the schedule, that's the part of the schedule where we know for sure, at least for now, that they're healthy. And right. This team, when healthy, is easily a top 3 team in the NBA. And they should win games against Oklahoma City that they lost last year. I mean, that's certainly one thing that I think is going to be very different with this year's team as opposed to last year's team, where we saw the Clippers win games that they had no business winning, but they also lost games that they had no business losing, and they lost a lot of those types of games that they really should not have lost. And I don't think that's going to happen in the early part of the schedule in October and November, so I'm glad you brought that up, because the start of the schedule is really favorable, and that's the part where the Clippers should be healthy. Now, granted, there are back-to-backs in there. I mean, you look at the start of the season with Sacramento and Phoenix. So getting Phoenix on the second night of a back-to-back, even though it's your first home game, is not great. New Orleans and Houston, getting New Orleans in the first part is definitely favorable, as opposed to starting with Houston, then going to New Orleans, or them playing against New Orleans, because they're both at
home.
And
it's a 12 o'clock game, too, and the next game is at 7:30.
Exactly.
Which gives them a little time.
Yeah, that's certainly favorable and something that you usually don't see happen with the Clippers. So, and then the 14th and 15th at Houston, at Dallas. So at Dallas is going to be a tough one on a second night of a back-to-back, but it certainly helps to have them healthy. So I'm glad you brought that up. What are your thoughts on the Grammy road trip? Because it seems like that's always a part for the Clippers that could kind of make or break where they are. And it's tough to even talk about that now, Justin, because we have no idea who's going to be healthy. But if you look towards January and what the schedule looks like in January and February, what are your thoughts in having that long road trip that'll end up taking them to Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, Milwaukee, New York, and Brooklyn from January 28th to February 6th? And then you look back before that and you've got at Utah, at San Antonio, at Dallas, at the Lakers, and then versus San Antonio from January 18th to January 26th. So what are your thoughts there on that that stretch from mid-January to mid-February?
My first thought was, I wonder what our road trips will look like once we get into it.
Yeah.
But you kind of alluded to it to start. It's not that bad. And I'm one of those guys that it is what it is. Like, our schedule isn't going to be completely advantageous. In particular, that Grammy road trip, it's some competent teams from Atlanta who should be better this year. Cleveland is good. Chicago is good. The Bucks are good. Brooklyn now appears to be good, but you never know with them. But, you know, so it's not. And then the first game home from a Grammy road trip, or any road trip for that matter, is basically an away game, and you got to deal with Luka. So that's basically part of the Grammy road trip. So that's probably the toughest part of the schedule, if you ask me. And that's, again, part of why I'm stressing to start the season so well and to win all of the games. I mean, we won't win all of them, but I would love to try. That should be the goal. To win as many games as we can, in which we're like heavy favorites, to stack up on wins, because there are going to be road trips that are going to be tough. It's like the Grammy road trip. So I'm hopeful that by that point in the season, we figured some things out. But yeah, that's a little bit down the road. But, you know, it's a tough. It's no way around that. And to me, it'll be interesting to see at that point who's in the lineup, who's not in the lineup, what are they doing with John Wall? Because we talked about Kawhi Leonard not playing back-to-backs, but is John Wall going to be playing back-to-backs? So they have some questions that need to be answered, and hopefully by that time they will be when it comes to that Grammy road trip.
Yeah, the final thing I kind of want to talk about with the schedule, and you can bring up anything else that may stand out, is always it's important to look at how are things going to end? How's your season going to end? And for the Clippers, it's not easy, man. It's not easy, because we know what Memphis did to the Clippers last year. And if you look at the final six games for the Clippers, at Memphis again, at New Orleans, versus the Lakers, versus Portland, at Phoenix. Of course, you've got that Portland game, which should be, you would think, a win down the stretch. I mean, who knows with Portland, though? Because with Lillard, if he's healthy, you never know. But that's tough, man. Five of the six are against Memphis, New Orleans, the Lakers, and Phoenix. And four of the six are on the road. So if the Clippers need to win a game for positioning, for seeding at the end of the season, that's tough. I think that's one thing that really stands out to me.
Yeah, that playing Memphis twice and then New Orleans is... That's not an ideal way to end the season. And then you're playing Phoenix up in there too. My thinking is hopefully we've solidified the one seed by that point. I think the goal should be to be the clear cut best team out West. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we've cleared enough space to where we're like four games ahead of the two seed. And we only need like a game or two. And then we can just probably coast the rest of the season. You know what I mean? Like, And that's why I'm kind of rare in that if they are healthy, I want everyone to play every game, and I want to push the pedal to the metal. I'm one of those guys that believes that the regular season matters, and we can't get the 3 seed or the 4 seed and think that we're gonna like seriously win a title. I mean, we can, but that route would be way harder, you know what I mean? So if we've done what we're supposed to do and we are healthy and kicking by this time, with like 5 games left to play in the season, we should have all but figured out what it is that we're gonna do. And some of these teams hopefully will be pun games too, because they've figured out what they are going to do, and maybe they're not playing for anything as much either. But from the Clippers perspective, if they haven't handled their business, then these games towards the end of the season, it makes the schedule look way tougher than it needs to be. And so hopefully by this time they've solidified who they're supposed to be, and we are thinking about who are we going to play outside of the plan. You know what I mean? So just going into that last 5-6 games as the one seed would mean a lot.
Yeah, and by the way, that New Orleans game is on the second night of a back-to-back, with that first game being at Memphis. So it's not easy. But I want to ask you a question, because you just brought up the regular season and the importance of the regular season and trying to get that one seed. Given that you think the regular season is so important, how do you think the Clippers should treat PG? We talked about Kawhi and the back-to-backs and how he's going to sit him out most likely initially, and if he needs to play them later on, or if he only plays 25 minutes in the first game of a back-to-back because it's a blowout, maybe he'll play the second. How do you think the Clippers should treat PG? And then that can even extend to guys like Marcus Morris and Nicholas Batum, who are not going to be able to get E2 legs or E2 games on their legs. So what are your thoughts in terms of battling for the regular season, trying to get that one seed, but also trying to rest some of your key guys?
So I think that's part of the design of this team. Mm-hmm. We're insulated against a heavy workload for any one guy in particular.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, the rest shouldn't come. This is, and I'm obviously not with the team. I'm not with the medical staff, so they have a better handle on the workload that these guys can and can't handle. But I think the rest should come in the minutes played, not so much missing games. And that's where I think the depth truly can come into play. So for me, circling back to the question about how we should handle Paul, I think if he's healthy, he needs to play. Like I was talking in a group chat earlier today about the Clippers, and I said that, look, they don't need to mess around with the regular season. No funny losses, no bad losses, just pedal to the metal. Let's get this 60 games rolling. And, you know, in my opinion, champions are dominant in the regular season for the most part. You have your rare exceptions, but they almost always have a very strong stretch of dominance, and it's not enough to just be good. The Clippers should be already in the inner circle of title contenders with maybe four other teams, but I want them to be dominant. And in order to be dominant, the guys that are healthy need to play. And if you're doing what you're supposed to do, we are deep, we are talented, we are well coached. You're sitting in fourth quarters, or you're only playing 29, 30 minutes a night. And I think that would be ideal as far as managing PG, not necessarily like finding games where he can sit out for like rest or precautionary reasons, because I think we've handled Paul well from a health standpoint since he's become a Clipper, but he's already had issues with his hamstring. He's had issues with his toe. He's torn his UCL and his elbow. So, like, if guys are going to get hurt, they're going to get hurt. And so if they're healthy, I think it's wise to just throw them out there. Let's win the games that we're supposed to. And if they're hurt, or if there's something that's seriously nagging, then, like, okay. But I don't – for me, it's not all that complicated. We have a very deep roster. If you want to take guys, if you want to shorten guys' minutes, then like that's okay with me. But I'm not really for the missing of games. The regular season is too important. The one seed is too important. You're walking a thin line if you're the two or the three seed. So I'd love to get the one seed, because we'd be playing somebody who's fresh out of the play-in, who's probably under 500, and that's an easy walk into the second round, and now you're cooking, you know what I mean? You have home court throughout. So that's kind of like my mindset is just, if Paul or Marcus or Nico, if you're healthy, play. And if we want to protect them, then we protect them with the minutes that they're playing, not necessarily miss games.
Yeah, I was just looking up Giannis's numbers in the last couple of years just to see how many games he's played. And last year he played 67 of the 82. And he averaged 32.9 minutes per game. The year before, 33. The year before that, 30.4. And that 32.9 doesn't even put him in the top 50. I mean, obviously there are some players in there that barely played, guys like Derek Walton Jr., for example. But That's pretty good. I think that's kind of what you want to do, is go for the Bud school of thought, where you tend to play your guys some fewer minutes. And I think that makes a lot of sense, where you want to have him play a lot and he'll sit the occasional back-to-back. I think it'll make a lot of sense. There will be some back-to-backs during the season where you have two easier opponents and PG sits on one end and Kawhi sits on the other. I think that'll make a lot of sense and something that you need to do. I don't think PG can play 82 games. I think he'll just be hurt anyways at some point for a couple of games. He'll miss because of some niggles. But I think a safe target is around 67 to 70. I think if you play him 67 to 70 games, I think that's a pretty good sweet spot. And then, of course, you got Kawhi, who's going to be sitting out, like I said, probably 15. If he does sit out all the back-to-backs, that puts him immediately at 67. That seems to be the area that you want to look at. And I think that could even go towards guys like Marcus Morris and Nico Batum I mentioned earlier. To your point, there are just games where they play less minutes. There are games where Nico plays 15 minutes. And then there are games where he plays 30, because you've got the guys where you can play Norman Powell more minutes one game. You can play Marcus more minutes one game. You can play Zoo more minutes one game. I mean, the Clippers are just so stacked. You can throw Kennard in there for more minutes. T-Man. There are just so many guys that you can put in there that, to your point, it makes sense to kind of manage this during the regular season, during games, as opposed to making guys sit out. But they will sit out.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, guys are going to get hurt. So
yeah.
that's kind of like my mindset. Guys are going to get hurt anyway. And so, you know, their injuries will figure it out for us. But as it stands now, right, like if we can get guys in the 65, 67 range and not miss time at the same time, then we should be in good shape. We're deep enough to handle that with relative ease, I'd say.
Yeah, and not only are guys going to get hurt, but some guys are going to get COVID. And who knows how they're going to handle it this year in terms of how many games they're going to miss. But following baseball, there are guys that get COVID and they're out for a couple of days. And that does happen still. So we'll see how the NBA manages that. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Clippers do with this deep roster, and we'll go into it more before the season starts, Justin. We still have two more months before the season actually starts, but I wanted to get on this pod here to get your reaction on that Pat Bev trade and the schedule reaction. Anything else you want to throw out there in terms of what's going on or with the schedule?
No, not really. I think we mentioned starting strong, and that's a huge dilemma. Not necessarily a dilemma, but that's just a huge thing for me. And so I know the schedule is long and arduous. That's 82 games is a lot, but like the first 15 are just like crucial. If we come out the box, build good habits, build good momentum, it really can set the tone for a potentially very special season. So when it comes to the schedule, it's just a matter of making sure we start off on the right foot, to me.
Yeah, I think we're all hoping this is the year. I think that's what we're all hoping. We're hoping this is the year that the team stays healthy. You've got this deep roster. Take advantage of it. Get off to a good start. Get everybody into good spirits and kind of build off of there. Because if you get off to a good start and you get people hyped and continue what that excitement's going to be coming into the season, it'll just make it carry over and it'll just be good things going forward. So it'll be fun to watch, no doubt about that. Justin Wilson at LA Clippers Film on Twitter. You will hear from him, no doubt about that. Probably at least once more before the season starts, and then we'll hit him up during the season as well. And of course, you can catch him on the 213 Hoop stuff as well. He does a good job on his appearance with the Lob the Jam podcast. So shout out to those guys as well, who have been tremendous. Justin, great having you on, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. This hopefully is the year, and I hope to be a part of it as far as like talking basketball with you.
Yes, sir. Justin Wilson, I'm Brandon Marcus. You can follow me on Twitter at BD Marcus. You can follow the Ethos Clippers podcast on Twitter as well. Like the podcast, rate and review it. Whatever you can do does help. And of course, you got any questions, comments, concerns, hit me up at BD Marcus on Twitter. Until next time, he's Justin, I'm Brandon, and go Clips.